Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
Well, good morning, everyone. It isn't snowing. Yay! We were driving home. We've been on vacation most of this week because it's March break. And so we tried to go see family and different things. And on our way home, it was snowing the entire way home. It was a lot of fun. And so it's nice to be here this morning and for it to be sunny and it's warming up and it feels like spring and it's not quite so depressing out. Right? You guys still sound depressed. So my name is Evan Oxner, just in case you don't know me. I am the lead pastor here at Connection Church. Technically speaking, I am Emma's boss, but I'm not really sure who does the more bossing around, right? And Emma's been doing an incredible job, hasn't she? And especially for someone of her age and this being her first church, like I am consistently impressed with her maturity and how she is leading and what God is doing here. And I've had a couple conversations this morning already about how what we want to do here in this church is not to just create something that is entertaining or something that just brings lots of people, but there's no change. What we really want to see is a movement of God. What we really want to see is people experience the presence of God. And we want to see his miraculous power change us and for us to be changed more and more into the likeness of Jesus. And that is a matter of prayer, and that is a matter of fighting the battle in the spiritual realm. And I'm so pleased to have Emma on the team leading the charge here doing exactly that. As we dig into the Word this morning, we're continuing our series on the book of Ruth. And the book of Ruth is not a long story. And we've looked at different aspects of it already this month. But essentially, the story goes that Ruth married a man who was from Israel. She was from the country of Moab, which was a kind of an enemy nation to Israel. But she married this man that was from Israel. He died, and she made the kind of wild, radical decision to not run away from her mother-in-law. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You look for the moment to get away from your in-laws. You're not allowed to say that when your spouse is here, but secretly in your mind, you're like, man, I can't wait to get away from this. They're crazy. Well, Ruth didn't say that. She actually looked at her mother-in-law, Naomi, and said, you know what, Naomi? I am not going to leave you. I am not going back to my other family in Moab. I want to stick with you, and you go back to Israel, I'm coming with you. Where you go, I will go, and your God will be my God. And that was such a significant step for her in her journey. Well, they move to Israel, and they start trying to make their way. And Ruth ends up going to this field and kind of picking up the leftovers from the harvesters were leaving behind. And the man who owns the field, named Boaz, saw her and was like, we got to protect this woman. We've got to take care of this woman. We've got to provide for this woman. And so he takes her under his wing and makes sure people are protecting her and provides a little extra for her. And then Ruth actually goes and basically proposes to Boaz. And Boaz is just overwhelmed and flattered by this. And then he says, I'm just so amazed that you would... You, you would give me this opportunity because you're such an amazing person. But there is somebody else in line first to be your kinsman redeemer. What is a kinsman redeemer? Well, let's look it up. So in the book of Genesis, we first run into this situation. In the book of Genesis, chapter 38, we have a situation where a man named Judah has a son, and his son marries a woman named Tamar. Well, before they end up having kids, he dies, and so his brother is supposed to marry Tamar so that she can have a kid to continue the first brother's lineage, okay? So the brother marries her, but before they can have kids, he dies. And so Judah says to her, listen, my other son is way too young. He can't do this duty for you. You'll have to wait. And she waited and waited and waited. And Judah never gave his youngest son to her. And the Bible tells us because he was scared that he's already lost two sons connected to this woman. And if he brings a third son in, he's probably going to die too. And so that, I think that's probably the first place that we see it. And then when we go into the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, we get it laid out in the Old Testament law. In Leviticus 25, verses 5 and 6, it says, No, that's not it. What am I talking about? In Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 and 6. If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. Okay? So we've got it there. We've got this idea, and what's that position is called is a kinsman redeemer. So the person that marries the widow and produces a son for their family line is called a kinsman redeemer. And so we get to this story, and we get to the situation where in Ruth, Boaz says, listen, there's somebody else, the closest relative is supposed to be the one who becomes a kinsman redeemer. And so Boaz goes and finds the person who is supposed to be fulfilling that duty according to the law of Moses. And in chapter 4, chapter 4, Boaz goes to the man and says, listen, are you willing to be the kinsman redeemer? And at first, it's just a matter of, are you going to buy the land? And he's like, oh man, I can buy that land. I can gain all that land. And then Boaz clarifies and says, no, just so you know, the role is that you've got to marry Ruth, this young woman. And it says in chapter 4, verse 6 of Ruth, it says, at this, the guardian redeemer, or the kinsman redeemer, says, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it. I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. Okay. What does that have to do with us? For many of us, and for those around us, and especially especially in our culture and our society today, there is such a significant push to protect your own estate. Now you think about it. You think about it. Who are the most important people in your lives? Family. When you think about your future, you know that at some point you're going to die, and so you are thinking about your kids. And you're thinking about your kids, and you're thinking about your grandkids, and you want them to do well, and you want them to be prepared, and you want them taken care of, and you want to make sure that they've got the stuff that they need so that when they grow up and they have kids, and they grow up and they have kids, and they grow up and they have kids, that they're doing well, that they're provided for, that they have the resources they need. Some of us have spent our entire lives looking at the future of our families and looking at how we grew up and saying, I don't want my kids to have the childhood that I had, or I don't want them to be in the situation of need like I was. And so we have done everything in our power to provide a different life for them. And we are consumed with our kids, with our home, with our finances, with safety for us and safety for our kids. And no matter what the cost is, we are determined to protect our family future, our own estate. And even if you're kind of like, well, I'm not sure about that, I'm pretty sure that most of us have some kind of experience with it, and you probably know at least one other family who is in that same camp. We are surrounded by people who will do anything and everything to make sure that their kids and their kids' kids have everything they ever wanted. When you look at the story in Genesis of the man of Judah and the woman Tamar, what you see is that Judah was so concerned about his kid that he was not willing to make a way for Tamar. And it's a really kind of awkward, weird story, but to condense it, you can go read it in Genesis 38, but to condense it, basically Tamar dresses up like a prostitute and sleeps with Judah and has a son anyway. And interestingly enough, that son is the son that carries the line down that produces the line of David and produces the line of Jesus. When you get to this situation where of Ruth is given this opportunity to marry this kinsman redeemer, the one who is supposed to be taking care of her, the one that is supposed to marry her and redeem her family line. And because he is so concerned with his own family estate, he says, no, I can't do it. So he's so concerned with his family legacy that he is not willing to marry Ruth. Well, Ruth marries Boaz. Boaz has a son. That son ends up leading the line to the King David, who then leads the line to Jesus. What was the first kinsman redeemer's name? Anybody? Nobody knows. So concerned about his legacy, and nobody even knows his name. And then we continue that story and we get to Jesus himself. And we have this incredible, miraculous story where Mary has a child. She's a virgin. She has a child by the Holy Spirit. And so she's there. She's pregnant. And the man beside her knows that one way or another, whether it's miraculous or not, the baby that she is carrying is not his son. Does Joseph abandon Mary? No. We get to this point in history, in the story of Christ, and we see how Joseph is there, and he knows, and I'm sure he was a man of faith and believed what the angel told him, and that he is like, okay, yes, this is a child from God himself, but I'm sure there were also moments where he doubted, and he was like, man, what if Mary actually just slept with another guy? Am I going to stay with her? Am I going to stick this through? Am I going to continue? Am I going to adopt this child? Am I going to treat this child like he's my own, even though he is not my own? We know Joseph, because he took care of a child that was not his. When I look at the story of Ruth, and when I look at the story of Tamar, and I look at the story of Jesus and these different situations, and I see even in the law this statement of the kinsman redeemer, I see a simple lesson that I think we need to grab hold of and that we need to wrestle with in our own lives. And that is that your family shouldn't be the only family that you fight for. Your family shouldn't be the only family that you fight for. And I know the pushback, I know the questions that come from a statement like that. You're like, well, I'm not gonna put my family at risk so this other family can be taken care of. I don't wanna just enable this other hurting family or these people who are not taking responsibility for their own lives. I don't wanna just take responsibility for them and let them continue their downward spiral. And I can't risk the health and safety of my kids in order to provide for somebody else's kids. My family can't be starving, my family can't be cold, my family can't be hurt just because I want to provide for other families. And to a certain extent, I agree. The Bible is very clear that you need to be providing for your family, and it is an essential responsibility that you carry. But I also believe that there are significant things that we think are needs that are not needs. Significant things that we dream about, hope for, desire for our families that are not actually essential. And we very easily become like Judah, who says, no, I can't risk my son in this situation, or like that other kinsman redeemer in Ruth who says, no, I can't do it because it might put my own family estate at risk. It seems very clear when we look at Joseph and how he treated Mary and how he treated Jesus, that your family isn't the only family you should be fighting for. And there's a cost, and there's a risk, and it's uncomfortable, and there's fear involved. But when I read this book, I do not see as the primary focus of this book how you can build a happy, long-standing family at the cost of every other family. I see a radical lifestyle of risk. That risks all the non-essentials and maybe even some of the essentials to fight for others and to fight for other families. That may mean something like adoption. That may be something like fostering. It may be changing your philosophy where you go, you know what? I'm not going to give my family whatever they want, regardless of the cost. It's no longer, I'm worshiping my family and I'm worshiping my kids and my kids are highest priority and I'm gonna take care of my kids' needs before the church and I'm gonna provide for my kids and everything they want and everything they need, regardless of where my finances are, and I'm going to give to the church out of my excess, out of my leftovers, but I'm going to take care of my kids and then give to the church, or I'm going to give to my kids and then the excess I'm going to give to a foster kid, or I'm going to give to my kids and then I'm going to go and sponsor a compassion child. It may be this matter of jeopardizing your kids' or your grandkids' sports careers. Or it may be a matter of changing up your vacations or your dreams or your retirement plans in order for you to care for others and care for other families. It may be a matter of serving other families. It may be a matter of running church in order to reach the lost families. It may be a matter of how we do church, that we are not judging people, we are not condemning people, we are not looking around and saying, well, your family doesn't quite fit, and so because there's a risk to having you around my family, you can't be here. Instead, we take the risk and we reach the lost. Because your family shouldn't be the only family you fight for. Whether it's a story of adoption or fostering, taking care of other families, we have seen how this philosophy plays out, and we have seen it play out with Ruth, and we've seen it play out with Jesus. We've got one woman in Amherst who was adopted as a child. And she grew up, got married, decided to start following Jesus. And then one day, she saw the kids ministry in our church and knew that she needed to step in to do something. She then grew in her leadership and the anointing of God to the place where she grew our kids' ministry, where now we have anywhere between 30 and 50 kids every Sunday. I don't think our church in Amherst would be impacting families like it is if somebody hadn't looked at her and said, my family isn't the only family I'm fighting for, and adopted her. And it definitely wouldn't be in the place if she didn't look at the other families that were outside our church and said, we need to do something with our kids' ministry to reach them. And she said, my family is not the only family that I'm going to be fighting for. And so for us, we have to wrestle with this reality too. We have to wrestle with this challenge and this risk that says, I care about my family, I love my family, I want to provide for my family, I want to listen to them, I want to give them such good things, but we also have to acknowledge that our family is not the only family that we should be fighting for, and we need to look around and see the families that nobody is fighting for, and we need to fight for them. The worship team is going to come back up here, and they're going to lead us in two or three more songs. And during those songs, I want you to be pouring your heart out, wrestling with these words and listening for what God wants to tell you. My guess is that some of you are here and you have heard God speak to you already, and you're scared of it, or you're nervous about it, or you want to deny it, or you think, well, that's just me being oversensitive, or that's just me kind of my own head thinking about it, and you need clarity, or you need God to confirm those words to you during these songs. I want you to seek that. I want you to listen. I want you to surrender to what God is telling you. And some of you are here, and you're like, man, I get it. I think I get it, but I don't know what that means for me. And during these songs, I want you to just open your heart up to listening. And as you're pouring out, listen and watch for how God is moving and what he's saying and how he wants to speak and what he wants to stir inside your heart. What it is that he wants you to do, whether it's how you change how you deal with your kids or your grandkids, or whether it's what you're focusing your prayers on, or you think, man, there's got to be something change about our church, or how I approach church and ministry, or whatever it is. I'm going to take the next few minutes here and seek the face of God. What he wants to say to you, and how it is that he wants you to live out the reality that your family isn't the only family you should be fighting for.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.